All right, here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
Hey, everybody. It's Christopher. Welcome to Finding Japan episode... Blah, 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 blah.
Two things in life I know. Music and coffee beans. I'm a coffee man, I know all about the coffee beans. I'm a coffee man, I know all about the coffee beans. I bring excitement to the music scene like a heaping cup of pure caffeine. 'Cause I'm a coffee man,
I'm saying that because I don't really know what episode number this is right now, but this is an extra special episode. Yes.
Why is that, Chris?
Oh, see, there you go. With me today, I have the one, the only, Fred. Hey, Fred, how you doing today?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing fantastic, fantabulous, excellent. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. This is great. This is the coffee episode. We finally found the time to get together and make this work. How did we do that?
You know, it's been a like 4-week process in the making.
It has.
Between me being in the Eastern time zone and you being in the slightly less than Eastern time zone.
Also known as Detroit time.
Exactly. Detroit standard time.
I don't know if I've told any of the listeners the story behind Detroit. Maybe you better explain it.
Well, basically, the day before Chris has been doing this, oh, I'm going to move to Japan thing for a while now, and I've been like, yeah, whatever. Nobody just moves to Japan. That's for goddamn ridiculous. Can I say for goddamn ridiculous on your podcast?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
That's awesome. So I'm like, that's for goddamn ridiculous. And about the day before, I think it was literally the day before he was to go on to this imaginary Japan excursion. And mind you, the day after he proposed to the now infamous, I'm sure, lovely Linda. He finally broke the news to me that I was right all this time, and he's actually going to Detroit. Now, why in Detroit, I don't really know, but it might have something to do with, you know, it being a big auto place, and he's into like the auto insurance industry kind of deal. I don't know.
I think it's because Detroit is exactly like Japan.
You know, I really didn't know that until I started seeing all the photos. It really has turned out to be a lot like Japan, at least based on what I can see through your photos.
Yeah, they moved the shrines and the food and all the people into Detroit. It's incredible.
Now, I've heard that there's a lot of Japanese people on the West Coast, but Detroit was someplace I never really expected to find Little Japan.
It's there, and I'm here. So, Fred had accompanied me, what was it, almost two years ago, it'd be 2 years ago this November.
Yep.
To the lovely country of Japan, and one of the most surprising aspects of Japan that I think we both pretty much shared is the coffee was somewhat magical in Japan. I think I actually had a coffee reawakening in Japan.
That's really saying something. It really is. You know, I've been a strong coffee goer, you know, pretty much my entire adulthood. But I have enjoyed coffee all throughout the world. But Japan really takes the taco when it comes to some really good coffee pretty much everywhere you go.
So let's do a quick recap here. What places do you remember that we went to?
All right, well, I remember the first place we went to is a Starbucks.
Starbucks, okay.
And then I remember about 1,000 coffee machines.
The coffee vending machines, yes.
Right. And I remember towards the end of the trip, we started hitting that one place that really captured the imagination of coffee lovers everywhere.
Oh, yes, we will get to that place. That was... Say it with pride.
Detour.
Fred calls it Detour.
Detour in Detroit.
Detour in Detroit. I don't even really know how to say the name of the place, but maybe we should spell it for the audience.
Yeah, definitely.
It's Doutor. I think it's Dotor, Doter, Detour,
Deuter,
Deuter. I haven't figured it out yet.
So basically, Detour.
Detour. I tend to agree with you on Detour, but only from a visual point of view, because the logo is black and yellow. All right, so let's run through Starbucks first. I think one of the very first days we were there, we were in Shinjuku, and the place we were staying at was the Hotel Listel. And I remember very specifically, we walked maybe 8 or 9 blocks, and the first thing we saw, like a beacon in the night, was Starbucks. And, you know, my general impression of Starbucks in Japan, though I have to be honest, I haven't been to one since I've actually been in Japan. I'm sorry, Detroit. but my general impression of Starbucks in Japan is that it's not entirely different than Starbucks in the U.S.
No, in fact, Starbucks everywhere I've ever been where there was a Starbucks is pretty much exactly the same. And it's kind of interesting why that is. It's because Starbucks does not franchise, so they actually own every single store in every single country everywhere. And they have the same training program and the same colors and the same logo and the same, you know, design. Just a sea of sameness everywhere, which in one regard is good because if you like their product and you like their environment, then you know you're going to get that same frothy, frosty, you know, whatever you prefer beverage everywhere, and the same slightly comfortable, slightly too loud music sort of way.
Yeah, with the slightly overpriced coffee accessories.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's certainly a feature of Starbucks that's not missing from the Starbucks in Japan. I think the only thing that they've done to Japanicize the Starbucks operation in Japan is to actually train the staff in traditional greeting methods and all that.
Which adds a little bit of flair, I think. It's not something that you expect when you walk into a Starbucks randomly, but you get it there.
I have noticed, too, based on my current experiences, when you buy a coffee in Japan, they'll usually give you a tray with the cup and the saucer and the cream and the sugar right there, and then you take it back to your table. But the Starbucks in Japan is similar, if not exactly the same, as the Starbucks in the U.S., where you get your coffee and then you go to that station and actually fix your coffee the way you want it.
Yeah, just a little bit of Americanizing of the rest of the world, one fast food restaurant at a time.
Yeah, exactly. But we heard an interesting story while we were in Japan about what Starbucks did to the coffee market in Japan. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I remember that coming from a gentleman by the name of Terrence.
Terrence. And I think a lot of the listeners of this podcast are familiar with Kobe Beef. I talk about his show a lot. So we didn't really get to what Starbucks actually did in Japan. I mean, Starbucks, in its introduction in the Japanese market, had a profound effect on coffee prices in Japan. Is that right?
So that's what we hear. Apparently, coffee was so much as, you know, 500 to 600 yen for a regular cup of coffee in Japan.
Yeah, it was an expensive commodity. It wasn't. It was almost sort of like a treat that people didn't normally have.
So then Starbucks pulls in and starts pricing their coffee the regular old price, since they have pretty much fixed costs for coffee all around the world. And everybody else, in order to sell any coffee at all, had to pull their prices down to match. So it's down to what, a couple bucks, maybe 200 yen, 250?
It depends on the type, and I think we'll start comparing some of those prices. But yeah, overall, I mean, anywhere between 100 yen to 400 yen, which is approximately anywhere between 80 cents to 350. I'm sure if you buy a large Starbucks, it starts getting up there, much like in the U.S.
Right, but it's not ridiculously more than in the U.S.
Right. In fact, I think it's cheaper because of the exchange rate.
Yeah, it actually would be cheaper, wouldn't it? Because out here, I'm coming to you live, or I'm live at the moment, but not when you're listening to this. But anyway, live from Times Square, New York, and if there's a Starbucks right across the street, the regular coffee is $1.70 for a small, which is which is probably more than it is in Japan, at a Starbucks.
You know, I'm going to go check out the prices and insert audio here. So right now, you get the audio. Here we go.
Starbucks coffee starts at around 280 yen for a small. However, the small coffee size is much smaller than its counterpart in the US.
Okay, that was great.
Yes, that was excellent.
But yeah, so overall, let's rate Starbucks on a scale of 1 to 5. I give it about I got to give it a 3 because it's nothing to write home about. It's Starbucks. It's consistent. It's okay. It's Starbucks.
Here's the one thing, though. I want to talk about something unique in Starbucks in Japan.
Okay.
So instead of little sugar packets like you get everywhere else in the world, they have the little coffee creamers that come in these little plastic things with the paper top kind of thing, with the little foil paper top?
Yes.
Instead of actually putting a little sugar in, you put these little sugar gooey things. And they have the regular sugar too, but naturally, when in Japan, do like the Romans or whatever. And so you put this stuff in your coffee, and it's actually so much better than like regular coffee and sugar in the United States.
Do you usually put sugar in your coffee? Is that like, are you basing this from a sugar in coffee mode in the U.S.?
I have a high degree of changing upness with my coffee. So many times I put sugar in, many times I don't put any sugar in. Mm. I like to mix it up. Depends on my mood. Depends on, I don't know, whatever.
See, that's a difficult thing for me to comment on, so I'm glad you're here, because I think maybe 3 years ago completely took sugar out of the routine when it comes to coffee, so...
When it comes to espresso drinks, latte, for example, which is my personal favorite espresso drink of all time, which I'm enjoying right now, as a matter of fact, from Starbucks, I gotta do sugar in the latte. I many times do not do sugar in the regular coffee, but in the latte it just doesn't feel right without it. And I remember for the first time I cracked open that liquid sugar goo and I put it in the latte, and it was a step above. It really was a step above what I was used to.
Wow. So
I was very pleased and impressed.
So not so much the coffee itself, but the coffee accessories and the coffee dressings that you found in Japan made the coffee taste that much better.
It really did, and it's really weird because the coffee itself was exactly what they sell everywhere else in the world, right? But this sugar goo was really something else.
I think overall one of the great things about Starbucks is the fact that they were able to bring prices down in Japan to make some of the other areas of coffee partaking available to us when we were there at a reasonable price. So I just want to briefly give you my comments on Mos Burger coffee. Now, Mos Burger is known for hamburgers primarily, but they do have pretty decent coffee there. And I've found that most stores that would otherwise sell or specialize in a particular type of product like Mos Burger and hamburgers often sell coffee now too. And that coffee is of relatively equal value, on par with Starbucks in terms of how delicious it is. Now, clearly Starbucks has stronger coffees, particular types of coffees, but when it comes to good coffee, it's not always having a fancy type of coffee now, is it?
No, and I think it's kind of interesting, even here in the U.S., because of the resurgence of coffee that Starbucks has really pushed, and even Dunkin' Donuts has pushed as well, in the East Coast cities like Boston, where I live, where Dunkin' Donuts is like, every set of directions starts with a Dunkin' Donuts on the corner, because there's so many of them everywhere.
Right.
So they're actually, making coffee so popular that even McDonald's now has really good regular coffee.
I've noticed that in Japan, that is also the case. McDonald's just recently started promoting their coffee heavily in Japan. And in fact,
here as well.
I had Yeah, so it must be a worldwide thing then. I had coupons for free coffee, but the issue was, despite the fact that I'm in Detroit and can't get to Japan, the real issue was you cannot buy you cannot use the coffee tickets before 10:30 a.m.
Oh, that's pretty harsh.
So it's kind of a killer, yeah. So no one really goes to McDonald's for a single coffee, but at the same time, you know, no one really drinks coffee from McDonald's after 10:30 a.m.
Right. Now, in South America, that would be a different thing because they would have coffee with lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I would have coffee with lunch, but that's just my deal. The average person in South America might have it all the time, but in Japan or definitely here in the U.S., Detroit, that would be very strange.
I'm a coffee man. I know all about the coffee beans. I'm a coffee man. I know all about the coffee beans. I bring excitement to the music scene like a heaping cup of pure caffeine. 'Cause I'm a coffee man. I know about the coffee beans.
Hi, Christopher, and everybody in the Planning Japan audience. Scott Lockman here from Tokyo Calling. And hey, I think it's time for a cup of coffee. I'm in Minami Azabu. The name of this shop is Allée Francais. And I'm going in. This place for me is the accordion music in the background, really quite nice. I have come to the shop over the last 2 years when I had morning classes at the university here in Minami Azabu, 3 or 4 times a week, and they have very nice croissants in the morning as well as other pastries and a good strong cup of French roast coffee. So that's Allée Francais, and thank you to Chris for putting together this coffee shop episode from Tokyo. Everybody, happy coffee drinking.
I'm a coffee man. I know all about the coffee beans. I'm a coffee man. I know all about the coffee beans. Coffee in the morning can be ecstasy. Like my sweet, sweet woman laying down next to me. 'Cause I'm a coffee man. I know about the coffee beans.
Okay, so we covered Starbucks coffee. We covered, I guess we'll get to some more restaurant store type coffee as we sort of reminisce about some of the places we visited. But I want to turn our attention towards vending machine coffee.
I think it's the next logical step in the coffee progression.
Now, people who aren't familiar with Japan may not realize that Japan has literally vending machines littered all over the place. You can be next to a car parking lot, and at the entrance of the car parking lot, there will be
a coffee machine or a coffee vending machine.
Yes, a coffee vending machine or a vending machine that contains at least 3 or 4 different types of coffee. Now, there's one coffee type or one coffee manufacturer that's pretty prominent in Japan, and that's called Boss Coffee. And I think what I find amazing about Boss Coffee is on their logo, it says, the boss since 1992.
Well, he may be a relatively new boss, but he is definitely the boss.
He's the boss since 92, man. I started high school in 92. No, 91.
Yeah. So you were a sophomore.
Now, I actually have a picture of vending machines that I'll put with the post here. So if the listener is listening now and you guys are interested, take a look at the show notes while you're listening, and you will see a picture of the actual vending machines. And I'm gonna show Fred the same thing right now. We're going to go through, and we're going to talk about maybe some of the ones that we've had here.
Really, I think that we can pretty safely say we've had probably all of them.
I think so.
I remember the 100% black or whatever it is, coffee.
Okay, so in this particular photo right now, we see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different types of actual coffees. This particular machine didn't have any Boss Coffee in it, I don't believe.
Yeah, at least we don't see any.
No.
I think it's important to discuss the red versus blue labels. So the blue labels are all cold coffee, like iced coffee, and all the red labels are all hot coffee. So the actual cans themselves are hot and cold, because the machine actually has like a hot compartment and a cold compartment to give you your hot or iced coffee as you please.
If you actually read the labels too, the top ones say, for those who are studying Japanese, they say tsumetai, which is the adjective used for any sort of cold drink, not cold weather, but a cold drink. And then the red labels are attakai. It actually means warm, it doesn't mean hot. But one of the things that's really interesting about these types of machines is that though they do have, how to describe this, though they do have hot drinks, more often than not, the can is burning hot and the liquid inside is just sort of semi-warm.
I was just gonna mention that. So the can is actually like it feels like it's thick enough to be a steel can, and it's hot. It really is hot. It's very hard to hold in your hand. They need like a little Starbucks sleeve.
There's a new type of coffee that I've been really digging. It's called Big Black.
Big Black. That kind of reminds me of Bear Beer, but that's a different podcast.
Oh man.
So regardless of anything else, from my personal perspective, based on my experience, I would say the boss is the boss of coffee, vending machine, canned coffee. So it's interesting, and this is kind of a side note, but what's interesting is Starbucks recently has introduced the chilled coffee can of slightly milky, slightly sugary coffee in a can in their stores. So you can go into a Starbucks pretty much anywhere, or even like a grocery store, and get the same kind of can as you can get in Japan of coffee, and it's meant to be chilled. They don't have a hot version right now. But you can go into Starbucks pretty much anywhere and grab a Japanese-style can of cold coffee.
The other thing we probably should mention, too, is that unless the coffee says, like literally says black, most of these coffees, including the ones in this picture here, have cream and sugar in them already, including these Wonder Shot ones, where you would think, it's like a shot of coffee, like straight up.
Yeah, it's definitely true. It's more like a little espresso shot with the sugar built in.
I think the only one in this picture that doesn't have cream in it is the 100% black. But in this one particularly, it's mostly Wonder coffee.
It's like one vendor owns the machine, and so they have like two or three brands that they own, and then they sell all their own stuff in there.
I noticed, though, in my neighborhood, there's a competition with the vending machines, and it's driving prices down, which is really good. I can get a 500 milliliter can of Mitsuya cider, which is something like Sprite, for 100 yen. So it's about 80 cents for half a liter. For a vending machine, that's not bad.
The one thing I want to say about vending machine coffee cans is that I think the boss is the boss of all of those, but in general, it's kind of horrible.
Yeah.
In my personal opinion.
I have to agree. I don't think it's the type of coffee that you want to be drinking for drinking coffee's sake. I think the saving grace of vending machine coffee in Japan is purely its convenience.
Yes. You know, sometimes you just need it either for caffeine purposes or for something to drink purposes or just because you're in the land of vending machines and you can't help but put money into them like some magical hold they have over you. But in general, it's kind of horrible. It's really horrible to drink.
For me, the primary reason why I drink vending machine coffee is to get rid of change that I have in my pocket.
And I think that's a perfectly valid reason.
I think there have been plenty of times in the U.S., though, where I'm walking somewhere and I'm like, I could really use a coffee right now.
And you know, a lot of places in the U.S., it's obviously not that common, but they have those vending machines where it kind of like brews the coffee right in front of you,
mm-hmm.
especially like truck stops and things like that. So those would be a little bit more interesting if they were everywhere.
That's very true.
I'm struggling
to think whether or not there is a similar type of deal in Japan. I know where I work, there is a machine that brews coffee for you instantly. And in fact, you know what? I'm going to take a picture of that and put it in here. And that's something that when we had talked previously, we didn't really plan out, but I'm going to introduce that now. Since you bring it up, this particular machine has little packets, and these packets are built so that there is a way for water to go in and for coffee to come out. And you basically stick your money in and you pull out a packet and you put the packet in the machine and close the machine, and it pressure brews the coffee through the packet into the cup. Now, it's a small amount of coffee. It reminds me more of, say, like a European-style coffee, but it's pretty good for prefab instant-type coffee. It's pretty impressive. I wouldn't call it instant coffee like crystal coffee where you just add water. I think this is a separate kind of deal, but this is only coffee. This type of coffee I've only seen in my office. I haven't seen it anywhere else. I haven't seen a public vending machine like that. I think that's...
Yeah.
Kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it kind of sounds to me, a little bit different than what I'm talking about. What you're talking about to me sounds like the Flavia machine. There's this company in the U.S. called Flavia. Now, their name brings about so many strange images that I don't even want to go there. But let's just say that they're called Flavia, and they have these little foil packets, and inside the foil packets is this little mini filter, and the pressure of the hot water and hot air like kind of inflates the packet,
mm-hmm.
and unfolds the filter at the bottom, and then it pushes the water through all that, and it's like a little, like you say, a little packet of instantly brewed coffee.
It's a lot like a Senseo, right?
It is a lot like a Senseo, only instead of having like an exposed little pod, the pod is like, you know, sort of shaped differently, and it's enclosed in this little packet, this foil packet that's sealed until you put it in the machine. So you know, they would say that the freshness is held in.
Yeah,
that, a little bit better.
That's what this machine is much like, the one that I have in my office right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that should really cover the full breadth of vending machine coffee, I think.
Automated machines that deliver coffee to you in a convenient way, yeah.
In convenient locations as well.
In convenient locations, yes.
Well, maybe we should talk about the convenient locations for a minute, because I think it's kind of interesting that you can get, you know, there's nothing more than you want on your way to work in New York on the subway in the morning than some nice, good coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But you really can't get any because you're not supposed to bring it into the subway, and if they see you with it, they'll start yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
But in Japan, they actually have like vending machines right on the platform.
That's true. That's true. You can get your coffee fix right on the platform.
In fact, you can get your coffee fix practically right outside the monk's shrine on the top of a mountain someplace.
That's true. Along with your liquor fix if you need it.
That's exactly right. And you can get your coffee fix practically, you know, anywhere that's anywhere at all in Japan.
The other interesting thing, too, about coffee vending machines, and I think this really applies to vending machines in general in Japan, is you can drink the coffee, but unlike buying a coffee on the run in the U.S., in Japan, there's a convenient place to put your finished coffee can.
Provided that you stay right next to the machine or find another machine, which generally is not very hard to do.
See, that's been my tactic. Many people in Japan do not buy something and then walk and start drinking it. They will either put it in a bag and take it with them, or they'll drink it there and finish it right there. But me being a Westerner, I haven't really changed my own behaviors to do that, so I find myself being that guy who's walking down the street drinking or eating something. But the simple fact that there are so many vending machines around, I really don't have a problem finding a place to put that empty can.
So that's kind of an interesting tactic. Here, generally we consider all of the ground to be where to put your garbage.
That's true.
So pretty much anywhere there is, you know, land under your foot is probably the appropriate place for your empty can.
One creative place for an empty coffee can that I've seen, though, is on a railing, that little spot between the railing and the wall where it fits just enough so the can won't fall down. I've seen a couple of
cans
there, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a creative spot for it.
Okay, so I think you're right. I think we've pretty much run the gamut of vending machine and automated coffee.
Well, that's going to do it for the coffee episode here. I wanted to thank my good friend Fred for joining me in this episode, and I also wanted to thank Scott Lockman for that bit on Allez Francais. Thank you very much, Scott. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and please look forward to the second one, which should be coming up in the next few days. Keep it here. Bye.